The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The fallout from the leak of a draft Supreme Court opinion on Roe v. Wade continues as Democrats sense the issue could help them in the midterm elections. President Biden says overturning Roe puts other rights and Supreme Court precedents in jeopardy. Is he correct? And is the current Supreme Court a threat to democracy? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot, and I'm joined by two of my very distinguished colleagues from The Wall Street Journal, Kyle Peterson, and the equally distinguished Joe Sternberg. Welcome, gentlemen. Good to have you here. So the leak of Justice Samuel Alito's draft opinion on Monday is really a big legal and political event. Never happened before in the Supreme Court that I'm aware of, a draft like that. Not a final decision, as the court stressed. And this was a February draft, so it's no doubt I will have gone through numerous revisions, updates, and, of course, if it stays the majority opinion, it would be something like a 5-1-3 opinion or 5-4 with the majority of the conservatives plus three liberals in dissent and Chief Justice Roberts somewhere in the middle, maybe partially dissent, partly concurring. We'll have to see how that comes out. And the majority opinion in these cases always responds to the concurrences, well, certainly to the dissents and then often to the concurrences as well, if they make major legal points. So that is how the opinion would evolve if it sticks and is the majority opinion. Now, let's first take up the issue of the leak, Kyle, because I think it's interesting. I mean, obviously, we don't know who leaked, but there's all kinds of speculation. And the way I always look at these leaks, I don't care whether they're national security or where they are, it's always the question, who benefits? When you're looking for a leaker, look at what do you think the benefit they hoped to gain from it is. And as I look at that question, it looks to me like this is somebody who wanted to undermine this majority opinion, stop it, maybe create enough outside pressure to be able to have one of the justices peel off that who are now in the majority with the Alito opinion and turn against it and make sure it doesn't happen.
Yeah, that seems to be the most prominent theory, that this was an attempt to stop this opinion from becoming the court's ruling, the court's majority opinion. But if that was the approach, I think that there's a strategic problem here, because now we have reporting, we've read the opinion, and the reporting says that there were 5 votes for this opinion in February. So if the idea was to leak this and create a backlash such that one of those justices will peel off, I think they didn't think it through very well, because now that we know there were 5 votes for this opinion in February, how can a justice back off that? Whereas if there was a justice that was wavering and no one knew, then he wouldn't face the same sort of question. So I don't know. I mean, the thing that I keep coming back to is that there are a lot of people that work in the court, not just the justices and not just their clerks, but administrative staff. And so it could be someone who is supportive of abortion, but doesn't really know the political realities of it well enough to have thought it through. It could be, you know, a copyist, a typist, somebody like that.
Well, on your point that this could backfire on who the leaker is on that grounds, because it might cause the 5 judges to be even more firm in their conviction. But that's the idea behind the theory, which is getting some prominence quite a bit on the left and in the liberal media, which is that this must be have been a conservative clerk or somebody, because they wanted to lock in Justices Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett. And they even cite our editorial from a week ago saying, see, which we warned that Chief Justice Roberts might be trying to persuade Kavanaugh and Barrett to come his way. But that strikes me as, you know, a double carom shot in pool. I mean, if you're a conservative and you've got the majority here, why would you want to take the risk of damaging the court and the integrity of the court, the credibility of the court, by leaking this in this way in such a dramatic fashion? It doesn't make much sense to me, Joe. And the other point I'd make is, look who has jumped on this politically. I mean, Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, has refused to condemn it. She has not criticized the leak. Brian Fallon of Demand Justice, who is a leading left-wing advocate on legal issues, lobbyist, has actually praised the leak and thanked the idea that this came out because it's exposed this early. So we don't know who did it, obviously, and we certainly don't know what individuals might have been involved. And I hate the speculation and the Twitter and so on naming individuals without evidence. But it strikes me as the who benefits question. Look at who think they benefit.
Well, yes. And I mean, it's also not just a matter of who benefits, but also whose philosophy of the court is this kind of leak consistent with. And I mean, certainly what we've been seeing on the left for some years now are all of these political attempts to chip away at the legitimacy of the court, precisely because politicians and activists on the left were concerned that as the court took on a sort of stricter approach to the Constitution, that the rulings were going to go against the way that the left was hoping for. And kind of the political response to that for a while has been to take a bunch of measures in the media and the political realm elsewhere to try to chip away at the court's legitimacy. And this kind of leak is definitely consistent with that way of thinking, that kind of the court is political fair game, the old norms that certainly would have held that this sort of leak was absolutely beyond the pale. That kind of consideration doesn't count anymore because the issues are so great. So I think that is definitely a philosophy or an idea that has been bubbling along on the left for a while, and that's why I think it's reasonable to suspect that that might be the corner that this kind of leak has come from.
Let's listen to President Biden respond to the news about the draft opinion.
What happens if you have a state change the law saying that children who are LGBTQ can't be in classrooms with other children? Is that legit under the way that the decision is written? What are the next things that are going to be attacked? Because this MAGA crowd is really the most extreme political organization that's existed in American history, in recent American history.
So, Kyle, the president rolling out his parade of potential horribles here, basically saying that this court, what you call this MAGA crowd, which, of course, I mean, that would be a surprise to Samuel Alito, who was appointed to the court well before there was anything called MAGA. But the idea that the logic in the draft opinion puts a whole slew of other Supreme Court precedents in jeopardy. Griswold case from the 60s, which overturned a state ban on contraception. I think it was Connecticut. The Loving v. Virginia, which allowed interracial marriage, didn't allow it to overturn a state law that barred interracial marriage. And then, of course, the Obergefell decision that created a right to same-sex marriage. Give us your take on the president's point there.
Well, I think that he's wrong on the politics and on the law. He's wrong on the politics because those other decisions have been broadly ratified by public opinion. And, contraception is approved at morally right or not morally wrong, I guess I should say, 92% of Americans in a Gallup poll. And there's a lively debate about whether it should be made available over the counter. So the political debate we're actually having is whether to actually make it easier to get these contraceptives. The one that's the most controversial, if you could even call it that still, is gay marriage. 70% of Americans in a Gallup poll say they approve of it and it should be treated the same as traditional marriage by the law. One thing that's notable is that the numbers for old people are the lowest and the number for young people are the highest. So that 70% number is only going to keep going up as the youngsters inherit the earth, as you might say. And so I think he's just wrong. I think there's no political appetite to go after any of these opinions that he's talking about. And on the matter of the law, there are also other things that the Supreme Court weighs. One of them is reliance interests. And there are something like 500,000 people in the United States now that are in gay marriages. And I just think that there would be no interest by the court to take that issue up. One other thought I would add on the theory we were talking about a moment ago about the fact that this could be a leak from the conservative side of the court is that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me also, just because even if the conservative opinion lost Kavanaugh or Barrett and Chief Justice John Roberts ended up writing the decision that held the sway here, that would still be a victory for the conservative side. That would still uphold this Mississippi law and maybe leave the question of Roe v. Wade for another day. And so if that's really what was going on behind the scenes at the court, it seems to me more likely that those conservative justices and their clerks would be interested in, you know, keeping their powder dry for the next act of persuasion on Roe v. Wade instead of reacting by trying to burn the whole thing down.
The reliance interests argument is a very significant point, because what it basically is referring to is if the Supreme, it is used in the Supreme Court to consider when it might overturn a longstanding precedent. And for example, a precedent that has been durable, has embedded itself in practice and law, is something that in which millions of people depend on, is an argument in the Supreme Court itself as a matter of law against overturning the precedent. And in the case of gay marriage, for example, certainly interracial marriage, I mean, if immediately do you think the Supreme Court's going to overturn that precedent in a way that creates problems and invalidates tens of thousands of these marriages? I just don't see that. It strikes me as going against the court's traditional arguments about reliance interests. And Justice Alito's draft opinion, Joe, directly says this. He didn't say this directly about the Obergefell decision, but he does get deeply into the reliance interest point. And then he says that this is something that Roe does not have the same reliance interest. And he goes through why that is in fact the case, namely because one of the things being that the court isn't banning abortion. It's just turning it over to the states.
Exactly. And, you know, that I think is, such an important contrast with sort of this overheated rhetoric that you are getting from President Biden and others on the Democratic side on this issue. Because actually, if you look at the leaked draft that has emerged, it's almost as if Justice Alito is going out of his way to deter the kind of chancing attempt to challenge some of these other precedents that might pop up. And I mean, that's also the important background to all of this discussion. I mean, before the Supreme Court would even have an opportunity to consider whether they wanted to rule on a gay marriage case or an interracial marriage case or a contraception case, again, a legislature somewhere would have to pass a law that would be designed to challenge some of those earlier rulings. And I think that to suggest that sort of thing would happen, I mean, expanding on a point Kyle made a couple minutes ago, I mean, that is really not giving voters very much credit at all. I think that the public understands the difference between abortion and these other issues, which is exactly why there is a controversy about abortion and there is not a controversy about a lot of these other things right now.
All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about the politics of the potential overturning of Roe v. Wade. When we come back.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot here on Potomac Watch with my colleagues Kyle Peterson and Joe Sternberg. Let's talk about some of the political potential reaction to this draft opinion. Already, Democrats on Capitol Hill talking about another vote on a bill that would essentially attempt to codify Roe v. Wade. Various states talking about doing the same. And Democrats all over the country talking about making this issue a centerpiece of the fall elections, especially in governor's races, given that state law will immediately move to the fore if Roe v. Wade is overturned. But let's listen to Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, talking about the potential vote on Capitol Hill.
I think it's important to note that there has been a vote on this. It failed. It did not have even 50 votes, which means even if the filibuster were overturned, there would have not have been enough votes to get this passed. He has stated this many times publicly. This is his known position. This is one of many topics he discusses with lawmakers. I would note again that Leader Schumer indicated he plans to bring it up again, but in the president's statement, just to reiterate, what he pointed to is the fact that there needs to be a more pro-choice official officials after the elections in November.
Kyle, this is a recognition of reality on the part of Jen Psaki, the lack of votes on Capitol Hill. But the fact that President Biden is stressing this and the fact that Chuck Schumer is going to move this for a vote in the Senate, notwithstanding a guarantee of failure, and the fact that Nancy Pelosi is going to have another vote demonstrates that they think this is a winner for them politically going into November, and they want to put Republicans on the record as opposing abortion rights, and they think they can prosper, and maybe it will help them keep their majority in the fall. What do you think?
Well, I would just amend that by saying at least they think it's more of a winner than inflation or the economy or President Biden's foreign policy. I mean, it does let them change the subject. The political effect, I think, is really hard to predict because we don't know how candidates who have been supporting messaging bills for four decades now are going to react and how well they're going to handle it. And there's risks on both sides. I mean, there are public opinion on abortion is pretty muddled, and there will be some hard questions for Republican candidates. What do you do about in cases of rape? There will be hard questions for Democratic candidates. And I don't know entirely how all of those are going to cut. But one thing I would point out is, for example, the bill that Congress is taking up that Schumer says he wants to take up again is the Women's Health Protection Act. And previous versions of that bill included a line saying that this act does not overrule any requirements for parental consent or notification. And the current version of the bill that passed the House that the Senate is now going to take up again conspicuously lacks any sort of similar statement. And to the contrary, it says in a finding that access to abortion services has been obstructed, including by parental involvement laws. So there's a case of something that House Democrats have already voted to pass. And yet, if you look at some of the polling on parental consent notification, the last time Gallup asked about this was in 2011, and 71% of people favored parental consent laws. So I think there are risks on both sides as they try to grapple with the muddle of what is actually the public opinion on abortion.
That underscores a point that I think has been forgotten in this nearly 50 years since Roe, which is that the politicians on both sides kind of got a free ride, right? I mean, they didn't really have to argue about this. They could take, I mean, with any kind of nuance or caveat or consensus building in mind, because they could retreat to their corners and shout, you're opposed to any kind of abortion, or you are in favor of abortion to the last day of pregnancy. And they really didn't have to try to persuade people. They could simply blame the courts and take the more extreme position. Now, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, they have the potential to actually make law. And that means they're going to have to actually debate and persuade and come up with an argument, Joe.
Yes. And to that, I would add that there's also this interesting question of what I would think of as political infrastructure. Because if you think of how these campaigns usually go with a lot of other issues that legislatures settle, on a daily basis, where you have some kind of controversy among the public and then people on both sides kind of lobbying, you have a bunch of activist organizations on those issues that are really set up with a mindset of persuading voters and then persuading lawmakers on the back of that persuasion of the electorate that has happened. So on so many of these issues, you have this infrastructure that's developed over years of organizations that are really set up with a clear idea of doing that. We don't have that on abortion because that hasn't been how abortion politics has played out in America for the past 50 years. Instead, you have an activist class and a way of thinking about this issue that is oriented toward very narrow ends, like trying to influence Supreme Court nominations in the Senate or organizing marches in Washington or that sort of thing. And so I think there's going to have to be a big reconfiguration on both the pro-choice and the pro-life side of this issue moving forward to kind of get themselves set up for the kind of persuasion that they have to do now, as opposed to what they've been doing for the past 50 years.
My own view of the politics of this is that I really don't know how it's going to turn out. That sounds like a bit of a punt, but I think it does depend, as Kyle suggests, on how the debate goes, how capable the arguments on either side are, where the emphasis comes out. But I think it could hurt the Republicans in some of these governor's races in particular, because, you know, take like Michigan or Wisconsin, states that have Republican legislatures that would be inclined to pass more restrictive abortion laws. think Democrats will say you need a governor in the state house who can veto those bills because they're going to go too far in the direction of restricting abortion. And that's what I think President Biden is also getting at when he talks about MAGA and trying to stigmatize the Supreme Court and any bills on this with Donald Trump. So Republicans are going to have to basically step up their game and make a coherent argument for abortion restrictions as we go forward. Kyle, I want you to address one other point, though, which is something we've heard on the left a lot since the news broke about this draft opinion, and that is that somehow what the court is doing with Roe, in overturning Roe, these five justices, if it turns out to be five, they are a threat to democracy. Take that on.
Well, I think all that overturning Roe would do would be to return this to the democratic process. For 40, 50 years, abortion has been largely outside, insulated from voters, from public opinion. And overturning Roe wouldn't make anything illegal, wouldn't change any policy. It would let voters themselves decide what they want. And I would point to the Mississippi law that is the basis for the actual underlying case at the Supreme Court here. It bans abortion generally after 15 weeks. It passed the state legislature by a 2-to-1 margin, 75-34 in the House, 35-14 in the Senate. It was signed into law by a governor who was elected with 66% of the vote. There was a journal poll recently nationally asking about a ban on abortion after 15 weeks, and a plurality of voters nationwide support that, 48%. Versus 43%. And I can only imagine that it is higher in Mississippi, which is one of the most pro-life states in the country. And so the question about democracy here, I would point back to the Mississippi law, which passed, it seems to be what the people of Mississippi want. If they don't, they can vote those people out and change it. And the question is at the Supreme Court is, can that duly passed law stand, or does it have to go because of Roe?
Well, and California, New York, Illinois, all kinds of other states are certainly not going to ban abortion. They might actually liberalize their laws. So is this going to be back into the Democratic ferment if this opinion goes through as the draft suggests it will? I want to thank Kyle and Joe. Thank you all for listening. Remember, you can catch us daily on your favorite podcast platform. And please send comments, letters, questions to us at pwpodcast@wsj.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Paul Gigot. Catch you tomorrow at another edition of Potomac Watch.
This episode is brought to you by Charles Schwab. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day. But what policy changes should investors be watching? Washington Wise is an original podcast for investors from Charles Schwab that unpacks the stories making news in Washington and how they may affect your finances and portfolio. Listen at schwab.com/WashingtonWise.